Well, good afternoon, Juno. Pat Moore sitting in for Katie Bowser today. It's 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska, and we are starting Juneau Afternoon. Today, we've got KMK McNaughton dropping in to tell us about the 1 Million Bones Project. Phoebe Rohrbacher will be here. They're showing a movie called How to Survive a Plague, and she'll be telling us about that at the Gold Town tomorrow night. And we'll learn about the adaptive ski program that Orca is running. Weather forecast says for the rest of today, we're looking at about an inch of snow, maybe a little less, 31 to 37 degrees, northeast winds, 10 to 20 miles per hour. And tonight, those clouds will decrease, scattered snow showers in the evening, patchy fog late, lows 22 to 28, east winds 5 to 15 miles per hour.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Four Northern Plains tribes will share in more than $100 million in a settlement with the federal government. The tribe said the government mismanaged tribal money and trust lands. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
The money that goes to the four tribes in South and North Dakota is part of a $1 billion settlement between federal officials and tribes from across the U.S. Tribal officials said money was lost through mismanaged accounts and unpaid royalties for oil, gas, and timber rights in Indian country. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe of South and North Dakota is set to receive $49 million. South Dakota's Rosebud Sioux Tribe will get $20 million. Slightly lesser amounts are going to the Lower Brule Sioux and Crow Creek Sioux. Other tribes continue to negotiate with the government. A spokesman with the Justice Department says the tribes can do whatever they want with the money. These settlements have nothing to do with a class action trust fund suit filed by Blackfeet tribal member Eloise Cobell. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
A new mid-distance sled dog race will travel 350 miles across eastern interior Alaska later this winter. The race between Tok and Eagle Village commemorates the life of an Athabascan chief who passed away this summer. From KUAC in Fairbanks, Emily Schwing has more.
35 teams have signed up to run the Top of the World 350 in honor of the late Chief Isaac Junaby. A majority of them are from interior Alaska. The list includes four-time Yukon Quest and three-time Iditarod champion Lance Mackey, as well as Alaska natives Josh and Jay Kadzow, and a host of other well-known Alaskan mushers. 2012 Yukon Quest champion Hugh Neff is one of the race organizers.
And it's just a way for people to train up their dog teams for the rest of the year, as well as see some beautiful country and honor, you know, a very special part of Alaska to a lot of us.
Teams will leave from Tok, Alaska, but they won't begin racing against one another until they leave from Eagle Village. During the layover, mushers and dogs alike will join village residents to celebrate the life of Isaac Junaby. He passed away after a car accident last July. Junaby was Han Athabascan and one of the last native speakers. The Top of the World 350 begins December 27th. For National Native News, I'm Emily Schwing in Fairbanks.
The Seattle Human Rights Commission is calling on Washington schools to stop the use of Indian mascots. The commission passed a resolution Friday calling on public schools to eliminate Indian mascots, and the commission is recommending the state enact a ban against such mascots. In a press release, Chris Stearns, chair of the commission and Navajo tribal member, said that the continued use of Native American mascots is dehumanizing and disrespectful, and that stopping the use of Indian mascots will create a learning environment that helps Native students build a strong sense of identity and self-esteem. The State Board of Education passed a resolution this fall urging districts to voluntarily retire their Indian mascots. Supporters and opponents in the state have been debating the issue for years. The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma's Angel Tree Program is in greater need this Christmas. The tribe kicked off its Angel Tree Program last week, hoping to serve more children this holiday season. This year, 1,900 children have signed up, 200 more than last year. The Cherokee Nation Angel Tree provides gifts to children who are in need. Each angel ornament represents a disadvantaged child, and the child's Christmas wish is listed. Principal Chief Bill John Baker is encouraging people to help. Gifts are being accepted through December 10th. During this month in 2010, Navajo Code Talkers Highway was dedicated in New Mexico. A stretch of Highway 264 near the community of Yatahe was named in their honor. Navajo code talkers and tribal and state officials were among those to attend a dedication ceremony. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Kiwanis is accepting artwork for the 2013 Alaska Native Art Auction scheduled March 7, 2013. Proceeds benefit KNBA and Native Public Radio programming. Call 907-793-3528 for more information. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after 3, and you're in tune with KTOO News. We're in the middle of Juneau afternoon. Pat Moore, your host today, sitting in for Katie Bousler. And my first guest is M.K. McNaughton, here to tell us about a program called 1 Million Bones. What an interesting name for a program. What's up?
The name just describes the project really well. It's a collaborative art installation designed by an artist named Naomi Natale, who was thinking about genocide and mass atrocities happening in the Sudan, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Burma. And she thought, what if we laid all the bones of the victims of these atrocities in our capital? Would we respond as a nation better? And so she decided to do that through art. And so she's putting a call out to people to help make 1 Million Bones. And she has reserved the National Mall on June 8th next year, and she will lay the 1 Million Bones down. So it's a call. It's a call to action, and it's a way to educate and spread the word, and through a very positive, fun art project.
Hmm. Can you give me an example of is someone doing these in Juneau?
Well, yes.
And so
thank you for asking.
Who are they?
Well, we just finished a really wonderful workshop at UAS as part of the Art Open House, and I thank all of the UAS staff, especially Pedar, who made it happen. And we made about 1,000 bones. They had about 300 attendees, and there were lots of other great events happening at the Art Open House. The Bones Project was just one of them. But I'm picking up the bones made there this afternoon. And Zontekihini Middle School made about 700 bones last month, and they're going to make some more in January. Thunder Mountain High School is going to start making some this week. Wednesday morning I'm going to go out there. And this weekend, coming up at the Canvas Art Studio from 2 to 4 on Sunday, so December 2nd, there is a free workshop. And these events are all free thanks to a grant that I got from the Alaska Association of School Boards and Veterans for Peace. Last spring I found out about this project, and I made 1,000 bones. The 1 Million Bones project was looking for somebody in every state capital to organize bone-making activities and then do an installation in the state capital. And so we did. It was kind of short notice. I had just a couple of weeks. And I don't have access to a kiln, so I made them with plaster, strip plaster. And it was kind of spendy for me as an individual artist. So thanks to my landlord, my studio landlord, the Goldstein Improvement Company, they helped me pay for the materials I used then. And then 1 Million Bones called me up and said, thanks so much for doing that. Would you make another 10,000 in Alaska? And so, of course, I said yes. But do you have any funding to help with the materials and the shipping? And they said they did have money for shipping, which is a huge, great.
Oh, yeah, that's the big expense.
Yeah, yeah. But they didn't have money for materials, and they were just hoping that universities and art centers would donate. And it being someone who's worked in an art studio, a community art studio, I know that art programs in schools don't have much money for supplies. So I wrote a grant, and the Alaska Association of School Boards gave some money. And I also approached Veterans for Peace, which seemed very appropriate. And they very kindly also donated money for materials. So thanks to those organizations, we have money for clay. And the clay bones are beautiful. They're very fun to make. And thanks also to Jeff Brown here at KTOO, who lent me his skeleton Mr. Bones, not his personal skeleton. Mr. Bones lives with him, and Mr. Bones is currently at the canvas getting ready for the event this Sunday.
Ah, so describe making a bone, please.
Making a bone with clay, you can do a lot of ways. You can cut slices of clay and form them very simply to make a rib bone, or you can spend a lot of time forming part of the skull, or the bones are all quite amazing shapes with curves, and these bones don't have to be perfect. They work really well as an installation. When you lay them all down together, your mind reads that they're bones. You can tell that's what they are. So people who are afraid of art can feel very comfortable at this workshop. And usually in workshops, we're encouraged not to use too much material or not to make too many. But the opposite is true this time. I need a lot of bones. I need kids with energy who want to produce a bunch. The more, the better, because I'm going for 10,000.
Uh-huh. Are you just in Juneau, or are you?
No, thanks for asking. In Petersburg and Wrangell, there are workshops scheduled. In Sitka, there's a big one coming up in January. And in Unalakleet, and three little villages around Unalakleet, folks are making bones in the schools. I think I finally found a link in Anchorage, too. I think that the sculpting professor up there is possibly going to make some cast bones out of metal, which will be great.
Hmm.
So we're going for 10,000 from around the state, and I welcome more workshops.
You sound like you need a travel budget.
That would be helpful.
Yeah,
it'd be
nice.
It's a lot easier.
Alaska Airlines, hear this.
Yes, I would welcome that. It's a lot easier to help in person. So in Juneau, obviously, I'm at a huge advantage. But I'm trying hard. I've been reaching out to the universities in Fairbanks and Anchorage, and I know an artist in Anchorage who's helping me get a response. So I think, thanks to her, we might have a workshop happening up there. But I traveled to Unalakleet for a different reason and brought plaster with me. And I set up a workshop, and one of the little girls asked me, "Now, what are we doing?" And I described it to her, and she shook her head and she said, "Well, that's going to be hard to explain to everybody." And it is.
Was it?
It is. There's a great short video on their website, and their website is 1millionbones.org. And if you open it up, at the top, there's a four-minute video that shows the first installation in Albuquerque of 10,000 bones. And it's very moving, and it really describes how this will work as a visual statement and call to action. And I also Googled the artist and watched a couple TED Talks that she gave and learned more about her before I took on this project. I think she does a wonderful job of inspiring people and bringing people together. The bones are a symbol of how we're all the same, what remains of us after we're gone. And so they're meant to be a common link to show our humanity. And it's a fun workshop. So it's an amazing mix of a really powerful, difficult topic and also a really positive message for the future.
Time for the workshop again.
It's 2 to 4 p.m. this Sunday, December 2nd, at the Canvas. And we have money for clay, so come make a whole bunch of bones. It's free.
MK, one of the real geniuses at this station is Jeff Brown, and occasionally he hands me a piece of music to play on this show. This one is unusual. Catherine Dines has recorded this thing where she introduces each song, and her introduction to Dem Bones, which we're going to play right now, bears exactly on your topic, but she's not talking about the current or the same genocide that you're talking about. She's talking about the kind of internal genocide that we created when we fought the Civil War. So here.
Thank you.
Here, let me get you a little more cider. Speaking of Africa, found out there was a slew of people who died right here in the Civil War. Soldiers and slave people alike. A lot of people died in that war. Fighting is a hard thing for me to understand. Always has been. Why, we ought to be working hard together to love one another and take care of this old planet Earth. just as sure as beans. That's why the spirits get so excited. They get riled up when the world is out of sorts. Can't blame them, can you? Ezekiel cried them dry bones. Ezekiel cried them dry bones. Ezekiel cried them dry bones. Oh, hear the word of the Lord. The foot bone connected to the ankle bone. The ankle bone connected to the leg bone. The leg bone connected to the knee bone. The knee bone connected to the thigh bone. Oh, hear the word of the Lord. The thigh bone connected to the hip bone. The hip bone connected to the back bone. The back bone connected to the neck bone. The neck bone connected to the head bone.
It's 18 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. We're in the middle of Juneau afternoon. Pat Moore hosting today and for Katie Bowser, who's had to take a day off. We just finished listening to Dem Bones, and I want to just reiterate that this weekend there is a workshop to work toward building 10,000 bones in the state of Alaska and to send them to a big National Mall presentation of 1 million bones on June 8th of next year. So M.K. McNaughton is the hostess. You can contact her at her studio to find out about the workshop. My next guest is here to tell us about a film which is going to be shown one time in Juneau on Tuesday the 27th at 7 o'clock. Phoebe Rohrbacher, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what's up?
All right. The 4A's, which is the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association, will be showing a movie called How to Survive a Plague. And it's kind of in honor of World AIDS Day, which is on December 1st.
So World AIDS Day in Alaska, I guess I'm not totally clear on how much of a event or how much of a thing AIDS is in Alaska. Can
mm-hmm.
you kind of fill us in?
Yeah. You know, while our rates of HIV and AIDS are lower than a lot of states, it still is an issue. We still have people who are affected with HIV and AIDS, and the numbers are increasing. So, you know, what the 4A's does is we provide services to those people who are affected.
The 4A's, again, stands for?
It's the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association.
Okay. And mm-hmm. how long has this been in existence?
You know, we've been around for about 20, over 20 years. In Juneau, we took over from Shanti, which was around from the early, in the early 80s when the AIDS epidemic first began. Shanti started in San Francisco, but the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association has been in Anchorage. It's based out of Anchorage, and it's been, you know, I might have misspoken. I think it has been around since kind of a grassroots operation since the beginning of the epidemic.
So how long have you personally been involved in this work?
I've been here for about 7 months working with the 4As.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how did you become involved?
Well, they had a position open, and I applied.
And, you applied and got the
job. Yeah,
drawing.
But yeah, we do. You know, we do education and outreach as well as case management for folks with HIV. We also do HIV testing, and we also are showing a movie on Tuesday.
Tell us about this movie. It's called How to Survive a Plague.
Yeah, this movie is a documentary by the filmmaker David Francis, and it is going to be, it talks about two coalitions who were working towards making AIDS treatment available. You know, it wasn't till it was 1986, they started, well, actually, look, it was 1987 that they came out with the first antiretroviral drug, AZT, but the costs were so expensive that they were, you know, it really was not available to everybody. And they also had drug trials that they needed, the FDA needed to do drug trials, and it was kind of this ethical dilemma, you know, they needed to do drug trials before they could release the drugs. But the people with AIDS were saying, you know, the side effects can't be worse than what's happening to us. We need you to release the drugs and make them affordable. So the groups were ACT UP and TAG, and mm-hmm. ACT UP stormed the FDA headquarters, and I believe it was 8 days after they had this massive protest, the drugs were made available for cheaper than the proposed price. So so this movie kind of chronicles the history of AIDS medicine and AIDS drugs and HIV drugs in the United States.
And obviously you're bringing the film here for the public to view. Is this mm-hmm. part of any other program? Is there a call here for people to become involved in something?
I suppose, you know, I think a lot of times people think about AIDS as something either of the past, you know, that was something in the 80s, that was something that, you know, this tragic epidemic that occurred but is kind of not a big deal anymore. And while it's certainly not a death sentence anymore, it still really affects a lot of people, not just, you know, in our community and also worldwide. I think there are, and I might be getting the numbers wrong, but I think there's 30 million people living with HIV around the globe. You know, maybe that's not the case. I can't, you know, I'm bad at the numbers. I've been reading so many numbers
yeah.
today, Pat.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people around the globe, and there are a lot of people within our own state. So, and while there are AIDS drugs now and HIV drugs to help make, you know, people can live a long life, they still are very, very expensive.
I think the one of the keys here is what you were saying about the fact that people think of it as an idea of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
With the advent of drugs which can control HIV,
mm-hmm.
while that's not a cure, it's a control.
Mm-hmm.
It means you're taking a cocktail of drugs on a daily basis for the rest of your life, and you're still in danger. And
correct.
You can still endanger other people, which changes your whole social interaction and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have a tendency to think, okay, so they cured that.
Mm-hmm.
We have an app for that now, and we can put it on our cell phones, and it's over.
Right.
And that's not true. And I think
mm-hmm.
that's the message that this film is going to bring home, is that we're still in the middle of a war here,
mm-hmm.
and this one is not won yet. Yeah. And particularly in Africa and other parts of the world, someone is infected with AIDS every minute.
Mm-hmm.
So the situation still goes on, and a lot of those cases will never see these drugs because they don't penetrate worldwide, and everyone mm-hmm. is not there. So this is really a meaningful event. This
yeah.
is coming up on Tuesday the 27th mm-hmm. at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
And you're at the Goldtown Theater, right?
Yeah, it's going to be at the Goldtown Theater. 7 o'clock. Admission is going to be $9 and then $7 for students. And all of the proceeds are going to benefit the 4As. We worked with Colette Costa to bring this movie here. And so we're just trying to make up the costs, and then any other money will go directly to the 4As.
Colette is an absolute marvel at bringing films that have a strong social impact message here.
She is,
she was
yeah.
a good partner for you.
She was very helpful.
Okay, 7 o'clock Tuesday night. The movie is called How to Survive a Plague. It's at the Goldtown. Admission is 9 and 7, and all that money is going to support the 4As, which again stands for...
Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association.
Okay, and we've had Phoebe Rohrbacher with us here to tell us about this. Thank you so much for coming in and posting us on this event.
Thank you very much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 26th of November, 2012. It's the birthday of the novelist Marilyn Robinson, born Sand Point, Idaho, 1943. Her first novel, 1980, Housekeeping, story of two sisters in a town called Fingerbone, Idaho. Their mother commits suicide. Their aunt moves back to town to take care of them. Marilyn Robinson went off to teach at the University of Kent in England. She learned about a nuclear facility dumping toxic waste into the Irish Sea, which resulted in unusually high rates of cancer among local children. She wrote a book about it called Mother Country. Came back to this country, University of Iowa, wrote her second novel, Gilead, in 2004. An epistolary novel, series of letters from a dying 76-year-old Congregationalist pastor in the town of Gilead, Iowa, in which Marilyn Robinson wrote, "Sometimes I have loved the peacefulness of an ordinary Sunday. It is like standing in a newly planted garden after a warm rain. All it needs from you is that you take care not to trample on it." It's the birthday of science writer Jonathan Weiner, New York City, 1953, author of The Beak of the Finch, a story of evolution in our time, and his most recent book about attempts to achieve immortality, a book entitled Long for This World. And it's the birthday of the cartoonist Charles Schulz, born Minneapolis, 1922. His father was a barber, supported the family on 35-cent haircuts. Every Sunday, the boy and his father read the funny pages together. The boy hoped to become a cartoonist, but he had a rough time in school, felt picked on by teachers, other students. His cartoons were not even accepted by the high school yearbook. He was drafted into the army. His mother died of cancer a couple of days before he left home. When he came back, he moved in with his father in the apartment above the barbershop and started drawing a cartoon strip for the local paper called Little Folks. He fell in love with a red-haired woman. They dated for a while. He asked her to marry him. She turned him down and soon after married someone else. Schulz was bitter about it for the rest of his life. But in 1950, the first Peanuts cartoon strip appeared in national papers, introducing Charlie Brown, and then Snoopy, and then the rest over the years, Linus, Lucy, Schroeder, Pigpen, Peppermint Patty, and Charlie Brown's unrequited love, known simply as the little red-haired girl. Charles Schulz, who said, "My whole life has been one of rejection, women, dogs, comic strips." Here's a poem for today by William Stafford, entitled Any Morning. Just lying on the couch and being happy, only humming a little, the quiet sound in the head, Trouble is busy elsewhere. At the moment, it has so much to do in the world. People who might judge are mostly asleep. They can't monitor you all the time. And sometimes they forget. When dawn flows over the hedge, you can get up and act busy. Little corners like this, pieces of heaven left lying around, can be picked up and saved. People won't even see that you have them. They are so light and easy to hide. Later in the day, you can act like the others. You can shake your head. You can frown. A poem by William Stafford, Annie Morning, from The Way It Is, published by Grey Wolf Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Reputation.com, helping businesses improve what potential customers find online in search engines and review sites. Learn more at Reputation.com. Written by Betsy Allister, produced by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's about 29 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore sitting in for Katie Bowser today on Juneau Afternoon, and my two next guests are here to tell us about the programs of a wonderful organization called ORCA, and the particular program we're going to be talking about is the Adaptive Ski Program, but we've got a little time to be able to talk about some of the other things that ORCA is doing. Tristan Knudsen-Lombardo and Lindsay Halvick are here. Hi, folks.
Hi. Yeah, thanks, Pat.
So tell me about ORCA.
So ORCA is we're a recreation program for people with disabilities, and we're actually a program of SAIL, Southeast Alaska Independent Living, and SAIL provides really a wide array of services for people with disabilities. We have a popular loan closet where people can loan out wheelchairs and walkers and things like that. We assist with transportation. We help with job acquisition, housing, finding housing for individuals. We have support groups that we run. So we do a lot of different services, but one of our pretty popular services and pretty visible services is our recreation program. And we run a ski and snowboard program in the wintertime, and it's actually a very visible part of our program for people that are up on the mountains on the weekend. And Lindsay's our snow sports coordinator.
So, Lindsay, tell me about the program that you run.
So we offer lessons to people with a wide variety of disabilities, both developmental or cognitive, to visual impairments, to even physical disabilities. All through the wintertime, basically we offer lessons to students from January until the end of the season in April every weekend. And usually the lessons are in the morning, and then we kind of have a ski buddy option in the afternoon for most folks. But yeah, it's a great program, and people really enjoy skiing with us and realizing their own abilities when they come up on the mountain, get outdoors.
So I know I've seen films of people using various adaptive ski devices and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have those? I mean, do people have to bring their own, or do you actually have the equipment?
No, we have the equipment up there, so no one has to bring their own gear, anything. We have what we call sit skis, a couple different kinds. We have bi-skis and mono-skis. Based on your abilities, we can use different pieces of equipment to help make everyone successful. So basically, it allows skiing to be a possibility for everybody.
Yeah, one of the really cool things about skiing is that it's incredibly adaptive. I mean, really, anyone can get up there and ski, regardless of what their abilities are, their disabilities are. There's a piece of equipment that we have so many different tools that we can use to get people up there. So whether you're able to walk independently or you need some assistance, we have really a wide range of tools and techniques and ways of getting people out on the mountain to ski. So there really isn't anybody who can't ski. Everybody can ski. So which is pretty cool about the sport, I think.
You must have to undergo some kind of training to learn how to teach someone to do this. How were you trained?
Definitely, yeah. We actually attend a lot of trainings down south. Over the last several years, we've gone down there every year. They have a national adaptive ski academy, they call it, down in Breckenridge, Colorado. So we've been down there quite a few times for advanced trainings, and then we also do a lot of trainings here at EcoCrest as well. So
and we've brought people up to Juneau to do trainings, and to get people certified in adaptive instruction. So not just people in our office, but also people up, just regular instructors at Eagle Crest. There are people that have certifications up there as well. So
I read all the time about new things like adaptive eyes for people who have terrible vision problems and things like that. Is there like a developing industry that is producing new equipment for adaptive ski?
There are a lot of businesses out there that are specializing in specific pieces of adaptive equipment, not only for skiing, but they're also making adaptive kayaks and canoes and even so far as paragliding equipment. I mean, there's everything out there. And as the field grows and it's becoming more international business, there's a lot more options out there for folks.
Mm-hmm. And it can be expensive, some of the accommodations, but in the example of sight, you know, it might not be that somebody might still be blind, but they might go with a guide, and the guide actually helps guide them down the mountain by giving some simple directional cues. So even if there might be a piece of, like, technical equipment that person could purchase to assist them and they can't afford it, there's usually kind of another alternative method you can use to and it really is based on the individual, kind of where they're at, and we kind of meet each other halfway. So,
how big's the Orca staff? The staff is probably not the right word.
Well, yeah, so we have roughly four staff in our office, 3 to 4 staff, depending on the time of year, in the Juneau office. We also have programs in Sitka and Ketchikan, so there are staff out in those offices. And one of the reasons that we're here today is that we utilize a lot of volunteers for our ski program. Skiing can tend to be kind of a one-on-one activity depending on the person's needs. And so we're always recruiting for volunteers to come out and help us in the wintertime. And it's a great way to meet some new people and make some new relationships, but also you get to earn some lift tickets when you come out. So,
and also lessons at Eagle Crest.
Mm-hmm.
So as many days you volunteer, you're almost reimbursed with either lift tickets or the opportunity to take a free lesson at Eagle Crest.
Are there what kind of requirements do you have for an instructor?
We do ask that the
core assistant, I guess.
They can instruct. They can be an assistant or a ski buddy. We do ask that they have some background in skiing, both downhill or Nordic. We also offer Nordic ski lessons, cross-country ski lessons, or snowboarding. They don't have to be able to ski every black diamond run on the mountain, but it is helpful to have at least some familiarity so we're not teaching the volunteer to ski. And then we do have some people who feel maybe they're mainly ski on groomed runs, and they volunteer with us, but then they use that time volunteer with us to take a lesson so they can better improve their skiing, and then they might be paired with a higher level skier next time with us. So we do have a wide range of as far as ski experiences with our volunteers.
But at the same time, there's no prior experience necessary in either working with people with disabilities or instructing experience. So we have trainings for all of the volunteers, and we familiarize them with the different disabilities that they'll be working with and make everybody feel comfortable and welcome. And
as long as the volunteer has an interest in working with a diverse population that, you know, and working with people with disabilities, that's great. So,
Lindsay, how'd you get involved in this?
I actually came up as a full-time volunteer four or five years ago with the Orca program, and I just ended up sticking around. and I got really involved with it, and it's become a passion for me.
And then underwent the training and became a full-fledged instructor in the whole thing.
Exactly, yeah.
How about you?
I grew up here in Juneau, but I did some volunteer work for SAIL during the summertime when I was in high school and college, directing the Only Fools Run at Midnight race. It's a big fundraiser for us. And then an opportunity arose after college to be hired on, and I jumped at it. So, yeah.
And they trained you and like that and got you up to snuff?
Yeah, I didn't have any really prior experience working with people with disabilities, and I was trained and just got my feet wet, basically, and yeah.
The question was a little bit loaded because you were asking for volunteers, and it sounds to me like a volunteer could actually move toward being full-time.
Yeah,
exactly.
As positions open up, usually those are the first people we look to are our volunteers. We've had some amazing volunteers over the years, and when positions open up in our office, we usually give them a call and say, are you looking to switch jobs?
Now, the Adaptive Ski Program is on all the time, or is there something specific coming up? Is there like a day or an event?
Yes, there is actually a volunteer information night coming up this Friday evening at the Rookery at 5 p.m. And that's just kind of an opportunity, a drop-in opportunity for interested volunteers that want to participate in the 2013 season to come by and fill out some information forms for us, find out more about the program, what their involvement might be or interest level. And, just kind of a meet-and-greet sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then on the
What day did you say that was?
Is that
Friday?
Yes, that's this Friday, the 30th, at 5 p.m.
Okay.
At the Rookery Cafe.
Okay. And?
On December 15th and 16th, that weekend up at Eagle Crest, we'll also have a volunteer training coming up. So basically we're just advertising a couple of the opportunities we have for volunteers to get involved before we start offering lessons in January.
Are you looking for the volunteers to show up on Friday if they want to come on the 15th or 16th?
Yeah, that'd be preferable, just so we know who to expect and who's interested, and we can get everyone dialed in up at the training at Eagle Crest.
So, yeah, you kind of need to set up things so that you know somebody's coming and like that. So if someone is interested in this, they really want to show up at the Rookery Friday night at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, or if they can't make it, they can always contact us at the work office. Our phone number is 586-0104.
And that's the work office for ORCA.
That's right.
Okay, good. Now, ORCA doesn't just do skiing, though. You've got programs going on year-round.
We do. We're busy year-round with things. We have an after-school program for youth with disabilities, and so we meet after school and we'll do, kind of given the weather, the conditions, everything from sledding and biking to fishing and hiking. We in the summertime, we do a lot of trips, both camping trips and then road trips out of town up north or down south. We actually just got back a couple weeks ago. We took a group to Hawaii for a week, so that was great. We usually do a big fall trip with folks. And so we're year-round, pretty much any outdoor kind of sporting recreation opportunity we take advantage of to do. So we're a pretty busy program.
Okay, Tristan, let's go back to this Hawaii experience now. I got to have some more details.
You should sign up to be a volunteer.
Yeah, you should sign up to be a volunteer. Right. We did. We took a group down to Oahu for a week in Hawaii and got to spend 6 great days out in the sun on the beach and kind of taking advantage of all the different sites and to see around the Honolulu area. So we do every fall, we try to do kind of a really big trip somewhere where it's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and we coordinate that, and then we go down, and it's a really great way to escape the rain and to do something fun somewhere else outside of Juneau. So
I'm beginning to find ORCA a very interesting volunteer opportunity. I think anybody
very
listening has got to think this through.
Yes, yes.
So if they came to the thing on the Rookery at Friday at 5 and they weren't ski people, could they sign up for the Hawaii trip?
Definitely. We are always looking for volunteers and if you're a kayaker or
rock
Hawaii
climber.
Enthusiast or whatever it is, we will a rock climber, and we will utilize your skills wherever they work best.
So you're really looking for anyone who is a skilled athlete and is willing to volunteer some time here. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that Tristan was saying the skill level doesn't have to be like, we're not talking about X events here. We're talking about somebody who just knows how to do a sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're a small staff, so we only have so many skill sets and experiences. So, we might not be great with horses or horse riding, but you might be. So that's a skill set we can bring in and utilize. So even if we don't currently offer that as a class or a program, we might in the future if you're willing to volunteer some time. So,
And it doesn't have to be like large chunks of time even. It doesn't have to be every weekend or even a full day every weekend. It could just be a couple of hours.
So for the rest of winter now, we're focusing on the skiing. But
yes.
Are there other activities going on through the winter that ORCA will be doing?
Yes, definitely. We have not only the Nordic skiing and the downhill skiing and snowboarding, but we also offer like snowshoeing. We go on sometimes Forest Service cabin trips. We do a lot of after-school activities for the youth in Juneau, do a lot of different activities within that, rock climbing or sledding or so there are a lot of different activities that we offer besides the skiing in the wintertime, but that's the biggest program we offer in the winter, but it's not the only.
But again, we can always use those hands, especially in a time like ice skating where it tends to be also one-on-one, getting people off the wall or their skates on. It's always nice to have a few extra hands for an activity like that.
Mm-hmm. And all of these various things you're talking about should talk to you at the volunteer info session on the Rookery, but particularly if someone is interested in working on Eagle Crest, they need to come to the Rookery Friday night at 5 o'clock and make sure that they've got a kind of a slot reserved for December 15th and 16th when you're going to undergo volunteer training up on the mountain.
That would be great.
That's
okay.
Great.
Hey, this is an exciting program that sounds wonderful, particularly the Hawaii aspects to it. And if you're interested in doing some volunteering, this may be the opportunity for you. Get in touch with Tristan at
586-0104.
At Orca headquarters, or show up Friday night at 5 o'clock at the Rookery, have a cup of coffee, and talk it over with them. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Birds brighten our lives. We find joy in their songs, inspiration in their soaring flight. They connect us with nature. But sometimes, birds connect us a bit too directly with nature. Park under the wrong tree, one where a flock of starlings or grackles comes to roost. And nature may be painted in white on your car so thickly that it takes a trip or two through the car wash just to see through the windshield again. Aside from helping you decide where not to park next time, this messy event raises a scientific question. Why is most of the bird poop we see white? The answer lies in the fact that birds, unlike mammals, don't produce urine. Instead, they excrete nitrogenous wastes in the form of uric acid, which emerges as a white paste. And uric acid doesn't dissolve in water easily. Hence, its ability to stick to your windshield like blobs of white plaster. It appears that drivers of some cars might be asking for trouble. A study in England found that red cars are most likely to be the target of bird droppings, followed by blue and black. Green was the least likely. So be careful where you park, and give that red Mercedes a wide berth. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Wouldn't you like to stay in bed all day? Wouldn't you like to stay at home and not go to school? Fly around the house in your pajamas. Well, it seems I've got some good news for you. You've got the flu. There's a bug inside my body living underneath my skin. I don't know how it got in there, I didn't let it in. Camping in my capillaries, surfing through my veins. Trampolining in my stomach, messing with my brain. I'm sick to my stomach, I'm tired and aching too. Achoo! Are trampling over me. Battalions of bacteria are marching sea to sea. Viruses in vehicles are speeding coast to coast, stopping to make camp wherever it can hurt me most. I'm sick to my stomach, I'm tired, aching too. And I'm getting lots of rest. I'm forgetting all my homework. I've ignored my spelling test. I am doing everything that everyone has said to do. I'm just waiting for this flu to fly, where flus have always flew. Mm-hmm.
I'm choking on warm chicken soup. I'm drowning in hot tea. No one else who's ever had the flu felt half as bad as me. A million milligrams of medicine are sitting on the shelf, but I feel so much better feeling sorry for myself. I'm sick to my stomach. I'm tired and aching too. Yes, I am sick to my stomach. I'm tired and aching too. Achoo!
John McCutcheon talking about those of us in Juneau who have just come through the four-day cold that knocks you to your knees, and maybe why Katie wasn't able to make it to the show today. So here we go with our last little feature for Juneau Afternoon. It's 10 minutes before 4 o'clock.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
That's the architectural design class at Clark Middle School in Anchorage, working on their current project at the end of a regular school day. The bell rings and kids scatter, but a few stay to talk about the work this class did last year. These students worked with real architects to help conceptualize a new park space in their Mountain View neighborhood. Here's their teacher, Heather McIntyre.
The first step that they really wanted to was to come up with a theme for the park. They didn't just want to throw in a bunch of random play equipment. They actually wanted it to be drawn together. And more of, Mountain View community has quite a few playgrounds, but they don't have a real artistic, relaxing place. So that was kind of what they were looking for. And the kids were working together, and they came up with this global theme that ended up being the main tie-in of the park to celebrate the diversity of Mountain View. And I think the final term for it was Global Village.
14-year-old Philip says he had fun working on the project.
And what did you think was the most fun part?
It was when we were designing and building and thinking of what to put in the park to make it more amusing for the little kids to have fun on.
The park includes performance space as well as community artwork. The teens asked the student body to decorate ceramic tiles that will be displayed at the park, and more than 100 kids made designs. 14-year-old student architect Jacob says it will be cool to see the park once it's done.
It would remind me of all of what we went through and all the fun that we had. If I see people out there playing with it and seeing them having fun, it would make me have fun.
I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
Weather forecast looks like light snow, new snow accumulation of less than an inch, highs 31 to 37, northeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. That's for the rest of today. Tonight, we'll see decreasing clouds, scattered snow showers in the evening, patchy fog late, lows 22 to 26, and east winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. And then Tuesday, we're looking at partly cloudy, with highs up where they were today, about 28 to 34, and northeast winds for 10 to 20 miles per hour. And then Tuesday night, the same conditions again, partly cloudy. Northeast winds, but those are going to gust up on Tuesday night to around 40 miles per hour near downtown Juneau and Douglas. And then Wednesday, that wind will continue with a slight chance of snow, and we'll see 20 to 30 mile per hour with gusts to 50 near downtown Juneau and Douglas. And the wind stays with us all the way through to Saturday morning. So a little bit windy near the end of the week, but for the next couple of days, just snow tonight and snow tomorrow, and the wind coming up tomorrow evening. So let's take a listen to some classic Wynton Marsalis.
Thank you.
Wynton Marsalis, trumpeter extraordinaire, doing a classic piece by Stanley called The Trumpet Voluntary, played by many seniors in the last year of their high school music program if they took trumpet. So a little step into the past there. Capital Transit is implementing winter route changes until midnight tonight. So service will be discontinued on St. Anne's Avenue, Cordova Street, Davis Avenue, Lemon Creek Road, and Franklin and 4th Streets downtown. There will be no service on Cordova Street, so please wait for the bus at the Breeze Inn stop. No service at St. Anne's. Please wait for the bus at the Douglas Post Office stop. No service on Franklin or 4th Street. Please wait for the bus at the Main Street stop. And no service on Davis Avenue and Lemon Creek Road. Please wait for the bus at Glacier Highway. Unless otherwise notified, Capital Transit will return to normal service tomorrow. But for more information, you can call Capital Transit at 789-6901. Pat Moore, your host today. I've been enjoying sitting in for Katie Bowsler, and I'll be with you again tomorrow. I'll have John Kramer's here from the Planetarium. He'll be talking about a program called Astronomy for Children, which will be tomorrow night, and we'll get details on the Christmas Oratorio, which is coming up King Island Christmas. Some of the King Island folks will be here to talk to us, and Adrian Schwartz will drop by to tell us about how the school district is saving energy on our sustainability segment. So join me tomorrow for the Juno Afternoon with Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more as usual. This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas, and we also broadcast on a set of translators. In the Valley in Auk Bay, you can tune to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're at K269 AO at 101.7. In Gustavus, they hear us at 88.1 megahertz on K21 AM, and K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Straits, you can hear KTOO at K210 AS at 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau, that's on digital channel 871, and KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872. KXLL is on channel 873, and we're also online at www.ktoo.org. Tongass National Forest officials tell us that Juneau residents should use extreme caution on Mendenhall Lake and the glacier if you're recreating out there. Fluctuation in air temperature and numerous icebergs can cause the ice to crack, so be careful if you get near the shore.